Okay. And once again, this is Earl Bell with Republic Magazine. And I want to welcome everybody to today's webinar. And we've got a special guest that I'm very pleased to have on here. I know that we're going to receive tremendous value today. And as I'd mentioned before, we've already got three questions online, and they'll probably keep coming in. So we'll certainly take those in time. So be patient. We probably will go ahead and get underway and then bring those questions in a little bit later. What I want to say now is in way of introducing David Morgan. David was seduced by silver at the tender age of 11, and he started investing in the stock market while still a manager, or still a teenager, I mean. A precious metals aficionado armed with degrees in finance and economics as well as engineering, he created the silverinvestor.com website and originated the Morgan Report. And so that you'll know that Silver Investor, there is a dash between silver and investor.com. So that way you'll be on the right website. And he originated the Morgan Report, a monthly that covers economic news, overall financial health of the global economy, currency problems ahead, and reasons for investing in precious metals. David considers himself a big picture macroeconomist whose main job is educating people about honest money and the benefits of a sound financial system. And his second job is teaching people to be patient and have conviction in their investment holdings. A dynamic, much in demand speaker all over the globe, David's educational mission also makes him a prolific author, having penned Get the Skinny on Silver Investing, available as an ebook or through Amazon.com. As publisher of the Morgan Report, he has appeared on CNBC, Fox Business, and BNN in Canada. He has been interviewed by the Wall Street Journal, Futures Magazine, the Gold Report, and numerous other publications. Additionally, he provides the public a tremendous amount of information by radio and writes often in the public domain. You are encouraged to sign up for his free publication, which starts you off with the 10 Rules of Silver Investing, where he has published almost a decade, or where he was published almost a decade ago after being recognized as one of the top authorities in the arena of silver investing. So with that, I want to welcome to this webinar David Morgan. And David, if you would maybe give a little bit of information on yourself additionally, and kind of how you came around to be doing what you're doing today.
Okay, Earl, I'm going to assume everyone can hear me. And before we get started, I'd like to know, how do I pick up the written emails questions-wise, because I don't see them. I'm on the website. Is there anything special I'm supposed to do?
Actually, the way this works is those questions will be where I can see them through my program software here, and what I'll do is I'll ask them of you.
Perfect. Okay. Well, you pretty much said a large mouthful on my professional career in the precious metals arena, and as far as saying much more, certainly, I mean, I can share a little personal stuff. I'm in my mid-50s. I am a family man. I have two teenage daughters. I have a wife that works when she wants to, not because she has to, but she's a nurse practitioner and very dedicated to helping others in the medical regime. I travel often, frequently. I'm very dedicated to what I do. I also try to balance my life. I sign off every Morgan Report with this close out saying, wishing you health above wealth, wisdom beyond knowledge. And I truly believe that. I believe that unless we have health, we really don't have very much, even though having a lot of wealth is certainly great, and it gives us a lot of freedom and a lot of options and a lot of opportunities, and I sincerely know all of those. But if you don't have the health to enjoy it, it doesn't mean too much. Wisdom beyond knowledge to me is that wisdom is working with the world the way the world really works, not the way you want it to work. And knowledge, although it's touted as very important, it is if it's applied. But you can know how to eat right and not apply it and have bad health. You can know how to invest conservatively and only make, you know, large speculative investments and end up, you know, losing money even in the sector. So that's why I find the comma wisdom before knowledge, beyond knowledge, because if you have the wisdom of experience and you apply it, in other words, the knowledge that you've used, and maybe you've used it correctly or incorrectly, if you use it to your feedback to become wise and gain wisdom, then as you gain in maturity, either through other people's experience or your own, then you will be a better person, not only in the investing arena, but in my opinion, throughout your entire life. So with that, Earl, we can start off. You can feed me the first question, or we can go through the outline that I sent you, whatever it is, you know.
Okay,
makes
maybe
the most sense from your perspective.
Sure. I'm just wondering, why is silver such a rare investment opportunity? For people who may not understand that.
Well, what makes it so rare as an investment opportunity is just the simple fact that so few people really know what is going on in the silver market. Rare investment opportunities come along once in a blue moon. It's, what makes silver so interesting at this point in history is that in actual fact, there is less silver in investment-grade form than there is gold. Now, that's a hard pill to swallow. I want to be very specific here. We're talking about 999 fine bullion form that's deliverable against a COMEX or LVMA contract. So those are your 1,000-ounce bars, and none of them really weigh 1,000 exactly. They're cast, and they range from 980 ounces to probably 1,000 and 3 or 4 type of thing. So, but the exact weight is stamped on the bars, and they have a serial number also stamped on them. So that's half of it. And the other half is the coin silver, which is either junk bags, which is 90% silver in the U.S. or 70% in Canada. There's very little junk silver or coin silver left anywhere in the world. There's some. And then there's privately minted and government-minted silver coins. There's the Silver Eagle from the U.S. Mint, which now has produced almost 180 million ounces with the fine silver since 1986. You have the Canadian Maple Leaf. You have some other mints like Australia. You also have one in Austria that produce a silver 1 ounce coin. So if you add those two together, you have about 500 million ounces, one half of a billion ounces of silver in coin form, and you also have approximately the same amount, 500 million or half a billion ounces in bar form. So together you have about a billion ounces. Now, you know, that's not me saying this. I try to back up everything I say with hard facts as much as can be obtained. And, yes, I'm saying that you'll see this webinar, but this is very provable if you go and study the Silver Institute's work and also the work out of CPM out of New York, New York. And both these studies cost a fair amount. They're not exorbitantly expensive, but something, of course, I have subscribed to for decade upon decade upon decade and have watched the silver dynamics change over the years. So one is it's rarer than gold, so that makes it a unique investment opportunity. But it also doesn't get near the notoriety of gold. I mean, you very seldom hear anyone talk about the silver market on CNBC. Now, when I was on CNBC, I've been on there twice. I was not asked about silver on either show. I was when I was on Fox Business. But gold is talked about, and quite a bit, actually, lately. I believe that silver is a superior investment to gold, but I also believe every silver investor, no matter how much they understand it, should be in gold as well as silver. In fact, the more conservative or the more mature you are in age, probably the more you should favor the gold market. But that doesn't mean you should exclude silver. Of course, I'm free market. If you believe in gold only and that's your conviction, then certainly you should stick with it. But I suggest, in fact, I'll do a bit of history here, and maybe it'll get a laugh or two. My sense of humor is rather dry, so bear with me. But I was in Vancouver doing the January show, which I've done almost every year for the last decade. And it was pretty early on, probably around the 2002, 2003 time frame. And I asked how many in the audience, by show of hands, understood gold and were in gold investing. And I'd say about 80% of the room actually put up their hands. So it was probably, you know, a great, huge amount. And then I said, how many in this room understand the silver market or at least are invested in the silver market? And I think I got about 15 hands. And this was an auditorium that held about 1,000 people. So then I made this very bold statement. Now, the ratio back then was around 80 to 1. In other words, it took 80 ounces of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold. I said, well, for all you gold bugs out there, I'm going to tell you something, and I'm going to help you to gain a lot more gold in your portfolio. What I want you to do is to write this down and take action. I want you to go to your nearest coin dealer with all of your gold, and I want you to trade it for silver. And so that was a pretty bold statement when the ratio was 80 to 1. About 3 years later, I went back. I do that again. I do that show almost every year. And I said, how many in this audience remember me speaking here 3 years ago? And I got a few hands. And I said, well, at that time, I made the statement for all you gold-only bugs that you could gain a bigger gold position because now the ratio, and I forget, it was around 60 to 1. You'd have to check a January of 2006 what the ratio was, but it dropped. In other words, silver had outperformed gold. So now take your silver that you really don't give a hoot about and trade it back, and you'll find you'll have a lot more gold. And all you did was make two trips to your coin dealer. So the point I'm making rather laboriously is that silver has outperformed gold from the beginning of the bull market, but of silver, which started in 2003. But if you started at the beginning of the gold bull market, which started in about 2000. Right now, they're about even. Gold may be slightly ahead. I'd have to look at the numbers, and I haven't looked in the last few weeks. But both are doing well. The ratio continues to favor silver. I believe that the ratio will go back to what I call the classic or the monetary ratio, which is 16 to 1. But when it does that, I expect that to be in the final phase of the bull market, and that's the panic buying or euphoric stage. This is when it's euphoria in the market, and no one thinks that the metals can do anything but go up, and they're going up parabolically, and silver will probably be on CNBC. But I don't see that happening for at least 2-3 years out, and that happens very rapidly, just like what happened on the dot-com boom, what happened at the peak of the stock market in 2000. These are parabolic moves, and I'll probably call the top, and I'll probably get pretty close. And when I do call the top, most of my readers that have probably most of them, not all of them, care about me and my work and all that we've done and the gains that we've made and that type of thing. And most of them will probably turn on me thinking that I've smoked something funny or I've had a mental relapse when I call a top, because in a euphoric market, when it's panic buying, people lose their senses. They lose their bearing. They look at it like you just can't come down. And that's the mark of a top. So it really takes someone to stand with conviction saying, you know what, nothing grows to the moon, and this is overvalued, even in fiat terms, if that's the case, and I'll make the call and I'll take the hits as they come in. So that was probably a long warm-up, Earl, but I'm sure I probably answered the question sufficiently. Why don't you go ahead and give me another one?
That's great. There's something I know you've mentioned, the photography myth. Does digital photography really mean anything?
It means almost nothing. If you read my book, in fact, I encourage everybody, you know, if you have $10 to spare, it's a great little book on silver investing. There's a couple of chapters devoted to the photography myth. And if you're looking for that little stocking stuff or something, you can go to Amazon.com, I'd probably buy them used for a couple bucks, and it's a good stocking stuffer to teach a young person or yourself about the silver market. But silver halide processing is a zero-sum game. Now, a lot of people didn't know that or understand it. We're saying that digital will kill the silver market. It doesn't. The reason being is it's a zero-sum game. For every print that's made with silver halide film, that silver comes back into the system. I'll give you a real quick example. I'll try to drive home the point. All the silver that's used in silver halide processing is recycled again and again and again. It never goes anywhere. So you get a dollar in, you get a dollar out. You get $10 in, you get $10 out. Doesn't matter. Doesn't add or subtract to the silver supply. Now, as an example, the highest amount of silver used in silver halide processing took place in 1999, 275 million ounces of fine silver. About 2007 or 8, I'm doing this by memory. You can look it up in one of those better silver studies I just mentioned, CPM, or this one comes from the Silver Institute. I know which study it was in. 2007 used 175 million ounces, 100 million ounces less silver used in silver halide film. Why? Digital's really caught on. In fact, it caught on to a greater degree than I expected it to. I did expect it to cut into the amount of silver used, but still, it's a zero-sum game. So all of that silver that's not used, silver kept going up and up and up and up in price, generally speaking. Certainly, all markets go up and down. But if you look, silver is up in the $20 range, $21 range, actually, when that report had only been out a few months. So the point I'm making is that silver halide processing has, for all practical purposes, zero effect on the silver market. Now, such notables as Jim Rogers, I shared a stage with him in Chicago one time, and Mr. Rogers spoke before I did, and he left and got in his limousine and took off, and certainly that's his prerogative, but he made that statement. Someone asked from the audience, they knew I was there, or they didn't. I'm pretty sure they would know that I was there speaking, but, you know, I mean, Jim Rogers is a billionaire, and I freely admit I'm not. But they asked Jim, you know, what do you think about silver? Oh, I don't know about silver. I don't know, because, you know, digital's probably going to kill the silver market. Well, he's come around. I mean, the guy is very smart. You don't get to be billionaire status and not be pretty smart and, you know, find your heirs or whatever. So he's actually, in more recent times, said, if I'm going to make an investment here, I much prefer to invest in silver than gold right now. So he's come around. He understands now what he didn't then, because it's pretty easy if you think that silver in photography is used up like it is in other applications, then it would have an effect. But since it's recycled, it has no effect. So I think I've beat that one to death. That's one that I get again and again and again, and people seem to, once I speak about it, seem to get it. If not, again, you can get the book or not, but it is a good little stocking stuff for a little something you can give to a young person to bring them up to speed on the monetary system, silver in particular.
Okay. In light of commodity trading and price effects, how important is the futures market?
Well, this is a tough answer. The futures market is very important from the aspect is that's what sets the price. I mean, there is no doubt what sets the price, and that's what goes on in the futures market. Now, the problem with the futures markets, generally speaking, not only for silver, is that there's so much leverage in there and so little are settled in actual commodity contracts, or let me say that again, are settled in the actual commodity, that there's huge influence in the price of any commodity based on the amount of paper being shoved back and forth. And that's almost regardless of the amount of commodity that actually exists. And this is not the original intent of the commodities markets when they started. I mean, basically, I'm not against futures trading, but when they started, they were more ethical, and not that that much has changed, although the rules are pretty interesting these days. But there was not that much speculation. In other words, the commodity markets themselves were used to settle actual physical commodities. Sure, there was some speculation. Sure, there were people that were buying and selling just for profit only. But the majority of the commodities, whether it be lumber or wheat or precious metal, were coming off the exchange. That has not been the case for a long, long time. I'm not saying that none of the commodities come off the exchange, because they do. When Warren Buffett bought almost 130 million ounces of fine silver, the stockpile on the exchange was 280 million. And most of the silver, if not all of it, came from the futures markets or from the commodities exchange in 1999, or actually in 2000 when Buffett bought. Since that time, the COMEX has changed the rules, where the most you can take off is 7.5 million ounces in any 1 month. You cannot go in and basically take all the silver off the market, like, not that Buffett took it all, but he certainly took a huge amount. That can't be done anymore. So coming back on point, the idea is that the futures market do have a huge influence on the price, but I think less over the last few years because, one, the amount of over-the-counter derivatives trading in any market, especially the metals, is huge. So that's had an influence, plus the ETFs have had a large influence as well. So if you go back 10 years ago, the futures market was absolutely the king, without a doubt. And early on, we were able to trade silver almost to the penny. I know that's hard to believe, but it was so it was, I won't say easy because it took work, but the amount of contracts held long and short, the commercials and that kind of thing, all kind of stuff that Butler writes about, I write about it in the letter, but not to the extent that Ted does. But the point being that you could use the Commitment of Traders report to trade silver for a few years very, very efficiently. You cannot do that anymore. You can't, have not been able, it's a tool and it's important, but it's lost the importance that it once held. So hopefully that's understandable by everyone. I do believe that it's very possible, and I've said this before, Ted, that there could be, I won't say would be, but there could be a day when the silver market actually stops or ceases to be traded on the futures exchange. Now, before everyone panics, and I think it'd be a good thing, by the way, and says, you know, well, what does that mean? It means a lot of good things, in my opinion. Number one, when people say, well, when exchange closes, it's like the end. It's not. If you know the commodities markets, like I know the commodities markets, you would know that at one time eggs were in the futures markets, and they're not anymore. It's a cash market only, and we still buy eggs every day. Milk used to be on the futures exchange, and again, when they closed down the milk trading, we still buy milk every day. So if we closed down the futures market for silver, it would have a more realistic silver price, in my view, because now you would be dealing in the physical market only, just like eggs or milk, and people that needed real metal would have to buy the price that was determined by basically the amount of physical silver out there with not all this leveraged contracts. It's never paid off in anything but funny money. So, I'm saying it could happen, not that it would happen. But it's getting to a point now with the amount of silver that's being traded on paper versus how much exists in the physical world to be so extreme that the futures markets may absolutely have to do something. And obviously they have the ability to, if you read a futures contract and read it really carefully, the exchange has the right to do almost anything, including close down exchange if they see the need. So, why don't you let me have another one? Or you should take some from the audience, whatever.
I sure will. There is one thing that I certainly wanted to ask, though. Why would you say that why you should always start with silver bullion and coins?
Why would you start with the physical market first? This is very simple once you understand it, and everybody on this call probably does, but I'll go over it anyway, because if you draw a square on blank piece of paper, and in that square you write the word system, and you write every asset that you have, your house, your car, your brokerage account, your futures account, your options account, your cash in your bank, your T-bills, your certificates of deposit, any stock you own, anything, it all goes within that box. Everything that you own that's an asset, that's an investment of some type, goes in that box. It's all dependent on the system. It's all dependent on either a bank, a broker, a computer, something. The only assets that go outside of that box that are not dependent on the system are physical gold and silver that is in your hand. Now, I know that may be a radical approach, but believe me, there have been times in the past, and I believe there could be times in the future, where you need or want or will have a huge advantage by having some gold and silver that you have outside of the system. Let's just take a case that we all know, the tragedy that gets talked about probably more often than anything else, and that's the great 9/11. Now, when that happened and exchanges were shut down, you couldn't trade your stock account. So if you had something outside of the system and you were making a business deal or whatever, having some gold coins, silver coins, or both might have been to your advantage. Maybe not. But that's the point I'm making. It's something, and it's the only thing, that you can hold that is an asset that's not a liability, that's recognized worldwide, has been for 5,000 years, and stands outside of somebody else being in the middle of the transaction. So that's the main reason. There's several other reasons, but that would be one of the main ones. Some of the other reasons, of course, are the fact that through the test of time, they've always held their value. Now, that's not to say that all markets don't go up and down, and certainly I'd be remiss to not say, as we all know, that gold was in a bear market, as well, and silver as well, from like the 1980 peak for almost 20 years. But I'm old enough to be able to go through two bull markets. I went through the one from the early 70s through 1980, and I'm going through this one again, and I believe it's far from over. So that will answer that one, Earl.
Okay, I've got one last question, and let's jump completely to the questions that have come in. With the new use of silver creating the demand squeeze, what can we expect over the next, say, 3 to 5 years?
Well, I do this, you know, lectures all over the place, as we talked about in the beginning, and on many of them, I use a chart of the palladium price as a proxy for what I expect the silver price to do. And if you go out and dig out a palladium chart, what you'll find is these huge spikes that took place in a rather short period of time. And that's what I expect for silver. I don't expect silver to go up slowly and easily and steadily like a good growth stock. I expect silver to be silver, and that means it's going to go up and down, fluctuate wildly, but go up generally much, much higher, and probably in a very short amount of time. So I expect probably, if we're going to talk numbers and everybody likes them, and you know, you can only lose on these kind of guessing games, because even if you're right and you're off by a buck, someone will say, well, wait a minute, you said 25 and only got to 24. But I'm looking for over the $20 range in 2010 quite easily. 25, from my analysis, is the key. Now, we all probably know that silver peaked at $50 an ounce. Intraday, it was a one-day event in 1980, that would mean, you know, the silver has, you know, some potential to get to that price again. I believe it actually will surpass it. But what I want to point out is that if you count the number of days back in the 1980 bull run that silver was above $17, you'll find it was very few. Although, now this time, $17 doesn't equal $17. None of us are that dumb. We know that inflation has eaten away the currency value for many, many years. But we are at this level in nominal terms, and it's staying here, and it's trading, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20, you know, that kind of thing, and it'll stay there building a base. Anyway, the point I'm making is that since silver did go from roughly this level to $50 in a very short time in 1980, and the hunts were involved in the market, of course, but they weren't actually a lot earlier than the peak. And at that time, there was almost 2 billion ounces more silver available for investment than there is today. I'll reverse the question and ask you, what do you think the silver market's going to do next time? I've asked the biggest dealers in the country, and none of us know. They don't know, but I'm friendly with almost all the main wholesalers and biggest retailers in the industry. And the consensus pretty much is that 1% of the population in the United States was involved in the silver market at the peak. Well, this time, I believe it's going to be at least 1% of the world's population involved in the silver market. I mean, you couldn't buy silver over the Internet last time. You can now. There's probably more dealers available for selling investments now and on wider ranges. In other words, not only is it U.S.-based, but you have Canadian dealers. Not that you didn't before. You did in the last run. But you're having more and more availability to buy silver either off the Internet or by phone or walking into a shop or that kind of thing. And you've got ETFs, which you didn't have before. So in other words, there's a lot more opportunity to purchase the metal than there was in 1980. And you have a lot greater population, and you have at least 1.6 billion ounces less metal. So where do you think the price is going to go? I would say the price is probably going to go higher than 50 at the peak. I think it's going to go over 100. But I don't want people to focus too much on the paper price. I want them to focus more on the reason why and the dynamics involved. The most important thing that you can learn from me is this, and I'll say it, I'll try to slow down. And this is a general idea. You know, some math major out there is going to say, well, David, it took place in less time than you said. So this is the idea. 90% of the move comes in the last 10% of the time. So So if we have a bull market that's a 15-year bull market, 10% of the time would be whatever, a year. And in that last year, in 90% of the move, probably not that much, but I'm giving you the idea that you may have silver in 2013 at $35 the ounce and gold sitting there at $1,700 or something. Anyway, silver's just really not doing it. And then all of a sudden, the next day, it goes, and it goes, and it goes, and it goes. And from 35 to 105 takes a month. And that's the idea. Is that what's going to happen? I don't know. I've studied this market most of my life. I know how silver moves. I know what people's psychology is. And I truly believe that's the kind of moves you're going to get in silver. Now, if it's from the $35 launching pad or not, I don't know. But I want to come back to something I said earlier, and that's 25. I use the $25 level. This, again, is my analysis, because at that point, almost, for all practical purposes, anyone that ever bought silver, I mean ever that's living, has got it at a profit. Now, I know it traded at 35, I know it traded at 40, and I know it traded at 50. But those are just days. We are like 3 days in that range. And most of those people sold off, you know, or bitter against silver if they bought it, or happy as could be if they sold it short. But those hardly count. I mean, that's just taking off, as a good math student, that'd be taking off kind of the tails off of a bell curve. You would cut off the tails on both sides. So 25, that's the key I'm looking for. And I think we can get to 25 in 2010. I'm not sure, and the reason I'm being a bit hesitant is because there are still so many deflationary pressures out there that we may even see the metals be pressured to the downside for some more time. That is possible. I don't rule that out. But regardless, you're going to see, once you see silver over 25 and continue to trade above 25, I think you're going to get a whole new dynamic in the market, similar to what gold is experiencing now, where you start to see some pretty big moves percentage-wise on a daily basis, both up and down, but primarily up. So I've probably taken care of that question.
Okay, great. We have from J. Richard Cohn in Chesterfield, Missouri, what action do you expect from silver relative to gold in the next few years? I think you touched on it a little bit.
Yeah, I do. I expect silver to outperform gold over the next few years, probably on a two-for-one basis. So for every $100 you put into gold, and an equal amount dollar-wise into silver, you probably get, if you got 100% out of gold, you probably get 200% out of silver. That's what I expect over the next 3 years, at least as a minimum.
Okay. We have Carl Lieberman in Venice. David, during this dollar strengthening period, 1 year, the question mark, how low do you think that silver will go?
That's a tough one. I'm pretty good at making these market calls. I haven't been perfect, but I'll put mine up against anyone else's. I'm waiting right now. If you're a subscriber of mine, you know that I'm saying I'm putting a $1,000 level on gold. If gold can hold above $1,000, and it looks as if at this point in time it will, then silver should probably hold to the 17.5 level, 17 maybe. However, if gold does trade under $1,000 and starts to fall from there, and it could, it doesn't look like it will now, but anything is possible. If that is the case, then I could see silver getting down to the 14 level. If you go back and read the Morgan report from a couple of months ago, if you're a subscriber, I talked about the two levels, the 200-day moving averages, where they crossed, why I thought that would be the lowest it could get. And I honestly can't remember the number, but it's somewhere around the 14 or 14.5, if memory serves.
Okay. John Greer in South Carolina asks, David, what is the best way to invest in silver today?
Always the best is to start with the physical metal, like we talked about. And I'm not a coin dealer. I don't sell bullion. I used to have a little report that cost like $40. It was well worth the money. I had a Chinese gentleman that called me after I put this report out, and his parents had $500,000 and wanted to put in the silver market. And he called the wrong dealer and got talked into this silver coin investment, and basically paid $500,000 for about $300,000 worth of metal. And he said that he read my report, it would have saved him almost $250,000. And, you know, I feel bad for people like that. And I actually helped him out as far as, since he bought it and silver was still around the $7 level, he actually came out okay. Not as good as he would have had he bought, you know, the proper type of silver in the beginning. But I took that report off the net. I got too many complaints. The reason being is it's a classic. Most of the dealers that are not that good in that report continue. They operate the same way. And people were expecting me to tell them exactly what dealer to use on a given day. That's impossible. What you want to find, you want to build a relationship with a good dealer anyway. You don't want to just, you know, I buy from this guy on Tuesday because he's 2 pennies less per ounce than this guy on Wednesday. I mean, that's, to me, that's my, I would never do that. I would build a good, solid relationship with a dealer that's on the lower end, but been in business a long time, is going to handle me right, going to mail it out right, I'm going to get a receipt, I'm going to get a tracking number, all that stuff. And that's what I did in this report. But anyway, if you're a big purchaser, it may pay to consult with me, maybe not. I mean, I'd say maybe 20% of the consultations that I do are that simple. It's people that have never been in the market before and going to put in a pretty big size, and they want to do it right. They want to know who they can trust. Now, I'm not suggesting you have to call me to make that decision. All I'm saying is that some people have done it on their own and paid a price. So on your own, just check around. You know, the GATA list is not the best list. It's a starting list. I actually used the GATA list, and we bought. I didn't use I had actually a proxy for me, a very good friend of mine that lived in New York at the time. I live in Washington. It was obviously not me, even though it was me. I supplied the money to my friend in New York to make the purchases because they wanted knowing that it was me because they might give me a favorable price or something, and that would skew the data. But I'm probably going on too far on this one, but let me go ahead and take the next question.
Okay. This is something somebody wanted clarification on. Mitchell Cooper Smith in Jerusalem asked, doesn't see video. Is there video? No. On this particular type of webinar, it's auditory only. So you're able to hear it online, and you're able to type in questions online. In fact, if you do have a question, I might as well mention that now, a question for David, then what you want to do is there's a box there that is a question submission box. Just go ahead and type your question in there and hit submit, and we'll see it, and I'll be able to ask it of David. If you're on the phone line, then what you do is just dial *2 on your phone keypad, and that way I can unmute your line and you can dialogue with David. Nick in Thunder Bay asked, some advocate storing junk silver in case of a major monetary crisis. Isn't the general public too uninformed to tell the difference between an older silver dime and a modern one?
I don't think so. If you read my book, that's what started me on this quest. I used to get 25 cents a week allowance for water in my dad's orchard. And one day he gave me a quarter, and it looked a lot different than any other quarters I'd had up until that point in my life. And it had a bunch of copper in the side, and it didn't shine the same as silver. So I think you could teach a six-year-old kid the difference between a silver quarter and a slug quarter in about a minute or less. So I have a different belief, but that doesn't mean – but there weren't many 11-year-olds that were catching on the monetary system either. I did. But, no, I don't think it's very difficult at all. I mean, I think it takes some time. I mean, you could throw it on the counter and say, you know, because people are so asleep. But if you took the time to get their attention and say, look, here's a silver quarter, here's a silver slug, see the difference, listen to them, drop them, they sound different. And I don't think it would take you very long. I would disagree with that. I think that, of course, I'm a silver bug and I'm biased, but I don't think it'd take any time at all to teach somebody the difference.
Okay, great. That's pretty understandable. John in England, in fact, that's interesting because John, we hear from John. He must be on every webinar, but he says, David, keep up the great work, and ask, how long do you believe this correction will last?
It's too early to tell. You know, I'm very good at position trading, which is the long-term trend and the intermediate-term trend. I blow anybody up, including myself, day trading. And so this corrective phase, we're still in an uptrend, obviously. The 1150 level is really the technical point. And by the way, for everybody's edification, and probably most people on the line know this, but everybody, I mean everybody that trades futures in the pit or electronically off the floor that's a professional uses charts. They all use charts, and almost none of them use fundamentals. Most of these guys and gals don't have a clue of what I've just taught you about how little silver is available and what form it's in and all that stuff. They could care less. All they care about is which way is the trend going. And that's it. So coming back, how long the correction? I don't think we're going to get a significant correction until after we get a peak in the first quarter of the new year. That's what I think. Subject to change. That's why you subscribe to somebody like me, because I do watch the market almost every day. I can't when I travel, obviously. But, again, I don't day trade. We position trade. And also buy and hold. I mean, I have a very certain way I set up the Morgan Report so people can make a mistake and still make a lot of money. But anyway, I don't think this one's going to be very long. I think it's going to be rather brief. I think based on, let's say we peak on Valentine's Day 2010, as an example. This is the idea. And then we start coming down from there, depending on what the deflationary forces are. Once these alt-A mortgages start coming online, they're just as bad as the subprimes. They're just as big or bigger than the subprimes. So we have a lot of deflationary forces up ahead in the economy. So we could get a peak in the gold at, I don't know, 1400 or something. Silver might make it to the 25 and not exceed it, or maybe exceed it for a couple days and come right off. I don't know. Something like that in the first quarter. And then we might have a rough rest of the year. I mean, the paper market, meaning everything that's in the box, like we talked about in one of the earlier questions, everything that's in the system. I mean, the amount of stuff that's in that box, that's financial and monetary assets, is so gargantuan compared to the little thing outside that box, gold and silver in the real physical form. It's ridiculous. So the box controls, you know, the stuff outside the box, at least for now, unless there's really a complete failure, which hopefully there never will be. But there could be some real rocky, rough spots along the way, like we've already experienced. And I think we're going to get some more. So I think we're probably not going to get a major correction here till the end of the year now. I doubt it. After we get our seasonality, yeah, I think we could get one then.
Would you say that you would be fairly in agreement with the types of things that Peter Schiff says on TV? He's on a fair amount.
Pretty much. Peter, I don't watch him that often. I've spoken to him very briefly. I spoke to his brother more often. I'm at some of the shows that they are. I've talked to his, some of the people that work with him. So if I misspeak, please forgive me, because I don't have time to. I read other guys' work, and I think his book is good. I've read some of that. I think that he says that, like, the rest of the world could do well, and you know, parts of, like, Asia and India could do well and America wouldn't. He's got this idea, and I may be wrong on this. The person that asked this question probably knows better than me, but I think his basic belief is that the U.S. could be going downhill and the other countries going up. I believe that to a much lesser degree. I think the overall trend is, yes, the major power structure of the West is in decline, and the major power structure in the East is on the rise. I believe that, but I don't believe that you could have a booming anywhere without the United States. And so if there is a huge deflationary storm ahead, and I believe there could be, then, you know, China is an exempt, India is an exempt. They're all dependent on the U.S. dollar and are pretty much dependent on what the U.S. does. Remember, the United States uses 25% of the world's resources, and yet it only has 5% of the world's population. So for China to come up to the average person in China, to come up to the average person in the United States, you need like four or five worlds or four or five Earths, and that's, of course, impossible. So you're going to see shifts. Now, that doesn't mean the technology won't take care of some of this. I mean, certainly China doesn't have to build out their infrastructure in the same way that it was built out in the United States. I don't think there's going to be as much copper used per person as there was in the United States, because now you can, you don't need the, you know, telephone poles and wires like we used to have. It's all internet, or it's internet and wireless. So the amount of copper per person is less, but the amount of copper when you've got 1.2 billion people is still a lot. So I think you see my point. So my main disagreement isn't on the fundamentals of honest money. I agree with them. It isn't on where gold and silver are going. I agree with Peter. It's the only real place where we differ would be that there's a spot or place or places in the world that could go up while the U.S. is going down. I don't see that. I'm more in the dimes camp, where you would see competing currency devaluations, everybody racing to the bottom, everybody trying to make their currency worth less so they don't lose their advantage on exporting whatever goods or services they're producing. So it's getting ugly. It's probably going to get uglier. It's not the end of the world. In fact, I think when this thing washes out and finally does bottom, not only is it going to be a huge opportunity, but I think we're going to have a fundamental shift in the financial markets as a whole, and it's going to be a new dawn, and it's going to be probably one of the best opportunities to invest in real companies and real things going forward. But that's getting ahead of the story. That's not going to happen for probably several more years.
Okay. I want to remind everybody that we're speaking with David Morgan of silver-investor.com. And let's go ahead and take a question from Peter in Lenora City, Tennessee. It says, one, as the dollar index is dropping, the value of gold is rising. My question is, why would the euro rise since Europe is so attached to the U.S. economy? And two, also, do you think the recent Mongolia precious metal find is a good place to invest with those mining companies? Thank you.
Well, the currency game is just that. I call it a game. Obviously, if you can trade Forex, you can do quite well, and I'm not opposed to anybody doing that. Really, though, the fundamentals is very simple. I mean, the truth is very, very simple on this stuff, and that is that there isn't a fiat currency on the planet that's really worth more than any other one. People make the argument that, you know, well, the Canadian dollar is good because it's got resources and more resources than, say, the euro does. But it's not a function of what the physical regime holds in the ground. It's a function of how fast it's being printed against somebody else's fiat currency. That's what really determines it. And then that's the truth. And then what determines the price fluctuation is how many traders you have going long and how many you got going short on any given day, or how much you need to trade out of a certain currency to buy and settle for an oil purchase, as an example, or you've got a couple of, you know, huge cargo ships coming into port and you need to settle and that type of thing. So it's more of a game. I call it the banker's last vestige of hope. Because most people will, not most, but a good portion, will think that, you know, the right currency is going to save them. It won't. Every currency is doomed, in my view anyway, and that's what history shows. So if you think, you know, the renminbi or the yuan will do better than the dollar once it's devalued against the dollar or whatever happens in the future, I don't know. Really, you got to look at the truth. They're all printed at will by the governments behind them. And, of course, I know the Federal Reserve is not a government entity, but there's some ties there, as we all know. And so I don't put much credence in any of the currencies. I really don't. As far as the Mongolian mine, I can't comment on that because I don't really have enough of a basis to speak knowledgeably about it. So I'll just have to pass on that second part of the question.
Okay. We have someone, and it doesn't give a name, but it says they're in Spokane, Washington, and the last four numbers of the phone number are 1364. Are you there, guest? You had a question?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. I have heard people familiar with currency, including Ron Paul, say that it is illegal to purchase goods with silver and or gold. I have also heard others say that it is not illegal to use silver or gold to purchase goods. In fact, when I was at the Silver Summit there was a booth there promoting purchasing with silver. What is the truth? Is it illegal to purchase goods with precious metals?
No, it's not. It's not illegal to purchase anything with silver, but we still have enough, one, freedom of speech, and two, right to negotiate or contract with each other. If I make a contract with you, in fact, I'll give you a real-life example. I have a good friend in California, and he basically built his entire home on silver, meaning he bought the land for silver. He got the foundation poured by the concrete contractor for silver. He got the house framed by painting in silver. So certainly it can be done, and it's not illegal. I think with Dr. Paul, and I've had the honor of having dinner with him one time. It wasn't a one-on-one dinner. It was with a group, and I greatly admire him. What he's maybe referring to is when these people make these coins that are not government-issued and have a dollar value on them, and they go in and buy, convince a retailer, like a gas station person or something, and it says $20 on it, and they get $20 worth of gas, and the going rate of silver is $11 the ounce. That is an illegal transaction because the truth wasn't in there. The truth was, if you negotiated, now if it was an independent, you could have negotiated it, okay? But when it goes in the till as 20 and it's only worth 11, that causes some problems. I'm sure you can clearly see that. So hopefully, since you're on the line with me, I'll ask you, did that answer your question?
A little bit. I'd like to do some more research on it or some more reading on it if you could recommend anything. I think what it's going to come down to is reading some law books or something like that.
Well, if you read some law books, you'll really get confused because what you're going to find there is that, you know, lawful money has never been taken out of the system. I mean, a dollar is a weight of silver. A dollar is a weight. And yet, if you go and get a silver dollar from a coin dealer, it's roughly three-quarters of an ounce, or actually 0.77 of an ounce, whereas the American Eagle says $1 on it, and it's actually one full ounce. So in one case, you got silver, 90%, that's three-quarters of an ounce in weight of troy ounce, and you got another one that says $1, it's a full ounce. So even the Treasury doesn't know what a dollar is. But coming back on point, the only reason that the system has got away with the fiat currency is because of legal tender laws. And that's because of the force of government. And government says you must take this as payment. But you can pay at face value. Let's take it the other way. Let's say that your tax bill for your property tax is $1,000 a year. If you wanted to, you could take in $1,001 silver dollars, real silver dollars, right? 1,000 of them, which is roughly worth, what, $20,000 in fiat, and pay your tax bill. And no one would say a word. That's as legal could be. So where the discrepancy is it's when you're negotiating the price of silver to pay for something. But you can negotiate it, and you can pay for goods and services with silver. That's legal. What you can't do is say, this is worth 20 because I stamped that number on here, and it's not a government coin, and pay for it, and then when that gets cashed back into the fiat system, if it doesn't equal, that's where you get some problems, and that's where you have this quote-unquote illegal activity.
I see. Thank you.
You're welcome. You want to shoot me another one? Are you still there?
Oh, yes, I'm here. I'm sorry. I had muted out temporarily. If you are on the phone line, just like this guest that we just had, and you have a question, just hit *2 on your phone keypad. If you're online, there's a question box, and you can type your question in there and hit submit, and we'll see that. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and move right back into the questions again. We have Adam in Salt Lake. Why are precious metals down the last couple of days, and do you think they'll continue to drop? I think you may have touched on that before.
Well, I mean, all markets go up and down. I mean, you can't expect gold to continue to go up and up and up and up forever. It's going to have to back and fill, as we say in the commodity sector. The reason is there's more sellers than buyers currently, as trite as that sounds. If you really understand that, you really study that, you really understand that, you can actually do pretty well in these markets on a short-term basis. I don't care to trade that way. So right now, temporarily, gold's gotten overbought. It has been for quite some time. Some people are taking profits. The floor traders that could care less about, you know, the physical reality of the metals, or the fundamentals, or that it's real money, or any of the stuff I talk about. All they care about is how big their bank account is at the end of the month. So a lot of those people are taking profits, and that's most of the market, by the way. Most of the market is not people like me that advocate honest financial system. The little people do, at least some of them do, but most of the big players don't. They could care less. All they care about is trading gold and silver and putting more money in the box, in the system, like we talked about in the beginning. And what was the second part of the question? How far do I expect to go down? Don't expect it to go down that much. If we got below 1750 here in the next week or two in silver, I'd probably get concerned. On a short-term basis, the long-term basis, it wouldn't faze me. But if we got gold under 1,000 or silver in the 17-ish range, I'd start to, not get real concerned, but I'd start to think maybe we are done. Maybe we are going to correct, more significantly than I expect. I don't think we're going to correct that much more in gold, and then we're going to continue back up. That's the way I see it right now. That's what the market's saying right now.
Okay, and Gary in Greenville, South Carolina asks, is the silver market rigged as the gold market is supposed to be?
Well, that would take me way too long to answer. I think, as a free market guy, the best thing you can do is answer that question for yourself. But before you answer that question for yourself, rather than base it on emotion, base it on actual hard work. If you go to the GATA.org, GATA.org, and read everything in there, it's pretty hard to come to a conclusion that the gold market isn't manipulated to some degree. And I love Bill Murphy, we're friends, and yet, Bill's like, they're doing it to us. I get a little bit tired of hearing that personally, because they've always done it to us. I mean, if you study gold like I've studied gold, I mean, the London gold pool was a blatant example of manipulation of the gold market. Gold has almost always been manipulated or controlled or subjected to government control from the beginning of time. Now, the question was silver. Well, yes, if you go back and study silver like I have, yes, it has been. I mean, you look at what Paul Volcker did to the silver market. I mean, Paul was a great enemy of the silver market. Go into my website, go into the archives, read everything by Charles Savoy. That'll keep you busy for a few weekends. Read everything on there. After you read everything on there, you draw your own conclusion whether you think silver's being manipulated or not.
Okay. We have actually, it looks like it's Eric Windheim. I've just unmuted your – wait a minute, hold on a second. Let me – okay, now it's unmuted. Eric, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a question?
I have a question. How can you carry some of these, say, Silver Eagles or so, in an airline across the country or out of the country? And do they figure the amount according to the face value or according to the daily intrinsic value of that item?
Face value. I've done it. It's just the biggest thing is you just make it like a natural thing. I mean, I've done it with both coins and bars. When I did it with bars, I was stopped. They asked, what is it? It's silver bullion. It's my business. Da, 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 da. I went. And that was from Florida to Washington State. On the coins from Spokane into Canada, they just looked at them. What is it? It's my silver coins, and gave me the bag, and I just kept on going. So, I don't want to give you a false sense of belief because legally it's face value. So if you've got 10,000 silver eagles, obviously in fiat that's worth a heck of a lot more, but it's under the limit, and I wouldn't push it to the exact 10,000. If it were me, I'd keep it, you know, 8 or 9. I don't know what you have in mind, so I'm guessing here, but the principles are sound. And then just carry on with your business, you know. You say, you know, I'm taking this, it's my coins, I'm bringing it to my mother-in-law or whatever, and away you go. Shouldn't have any problem. The problem I have at the bars was that TSA said, did you know that this 8-pound, 100-ounce bar of silver could be used to whack somebody on the head? And my answer, smart as I am, was actually I had never thought of that. My mind just doesn't work in that realm. You know, I'm just not criminally minded, I guess. And, of course, he's right. I mean, you could bop somebody, but some woman could bop somebody with their purse. It probably weighs 20 pounds, not 8 pounds. Anyway, the point was they got a bit touchy about it. But they handed me back the bars, and I said I would not take them out until I got back home, and I didn't, and everybody was happy. So the other thing you could do is call up TSA, or I don't know what jurisdiction you're in, and ask before you go. But I usually take gold and silver with me everywhere I go, but not in great quantities. I usually take 3 ounces of gold. I just throw them in the coin thing, you know, when you go through TSA. They don't know it's gold. People are still asleep. They don't know what's going on. You know, I throw in a few silver dollars and a few Krugs and go through the line, and they never, in the coin deal, and with my slugs along with them, nice mix, you might say, and no one gives me a second look. So if you're just doing a few, I'd suggest doing it that way. But if you're talking a large quantity, I think just for your own peace of mind, you might want to call up and ask first.
Eric, did that answer your question?
Yep.
Okay. Anything else, or okay? Great. Thanks for that question. All right, and then with that, we'll move to back to the questions we have here. We have Ginny Ledford and Friday Harbor. Is the default of Dubai the smoking gun for future government defaults, and how do you see that affecting the PM markets in the near future, the precious metals markets in the near future? Are you there, David? Hello? Whoa. Oh, man. Did I lose David? Hello, are you there, David?
Yep, I'm here, loud and clear.
Something happened, a technical thing here. The next question, I don't know if you heard me when I said it.
Yeah, I got the question. Can you hear me?
All right.
Yeah, Jenny, I'd say, you know, what I wrote in the Morgan Report still holds. Certainly it could be the start of something bigger. We just don't know what the credit default swaps are against that and what who owns them. But it could be another domino falling. What would that do for the precious metals? All these things are only beneficial to the precious metals. They can only benefit something that stood the test of time as a store of value and actual wealth itself. Now, that doesn't mean that the price can't get whacked down for a while, but the ultimate truth is that it can only be beneficial to the metals.
Okay. I know that we've gone close to an hour. There are a few more, looked like some fairly good questions. If we could, depending on your schedule, David, do we have just a little bit more time?
Well, I've got a 1:30 consultation, so I'll take a couple more. But before we do, let me make an announcement here, because it was suggested by the good folks at Republic Magazine that I give a special offer to everybody in this webinar. So I'm going to do it. So listen intently or write it down. It's pretty simple if you listen. I'm going to let everyone that's on this webinar get free access to the Morgan Report. That's my hard work that I feed my family with for absolute free. All you have to do is you have to go to the website, silver-investor.com/republic, R-E-P-U-B-L-I-C. You put that in, you'll get the form. and you do have to put in your credit card. I'm not going to give this out for absolute free. I'm doing it on my good word. If you're not, you know, man or woman enough to say that you are who you say you are, I don't want to do business with you anyway. So you put in what your information, and you can get access to probably the premier website as far as amount of effort, work, and time is concerned in the precious metals arena. Nobody does what I do. Nobody. They don't do the amount of work. They don't do the videos. They don't do the audios. They don't do the mining reports. They don't give the analysis that I give. And it's ridiculous that I get paid $130 a year for this report. It should be about $1,030 a year, but it's not. And I'm not going to up the price even. I'm going to leave it. I am going to go to a premium service next year, but that's not enough time to talk about that. No, they're for people who are very, very serious. It's not for people that just are in the sector in a light way or want to have just enough silver or gold to protect themselves, which is most people. So I want to make it available for most people at a low cost. So, again, if you want to see everything behind the curtain, so to speak, you want to see what it looks like after 10 years of being so diligent in this marketplace, go to silver-investor.com/republic. You'll sign up. You will get full access for 30 days. If you don't like it and you don't want it, that's fine. You can quit. It costs you zero. So that's the offer I'm going to make. I don't make that offer very often, but I like you, Earl, and I like what the Republic magazine stands for. It has almost all of my core values in there, and I am a big participant in the Freedom Fest, as you know. So next question.
Absolutely, and we certainly appreciate you also as an advertiser with us, and we know that you're definitely on board with the same principles. I wanted to invite you also at this time, if you would, David. Is there any other contact information? Let's say somebody wanted to call a number. Do you give a number out? Or?
Yeah, I'll give you my office number. It's answered by an answering service almost all the time. I do take the calls occasionally if I'm doing a consultation. But the phone number is 509-464-1651. All the stuff is on the website, by the way. If you go to the website, silver-investor.com, and hit the Contact Us button. We're not hiding anywhere. I mean, there's a phone number, a fax number, an email number. You know, there's several ways to get a hold of us. So it's not, you know, we're in business. I mean, we have to be available. But, again, it's 509-464-1651. Normal business hours. If you call after that, you'll get an answering machine like everybody else. But and the easiest probably is email. It goes to my staff, and they sort through it. You can imagine the amount of emails that we get. But they sort through it, and I get the, you know, the important ones. We don't miss much. If you do send an important email, and of course it's important to you. I'm not saying that no one isn't important. All I'm saying is that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that gets spammed and all that type of stuff. But anyway, if you by some chance send something important and we do miss it, just send it again or pick up the phone. Just make sure, you know, be persistent is all I'm saying.
Okay. If John and Victoria ask, if silver does have a blow-off over $100, would ETFs such as SLV, who hold their silver in public depositories, be safe from confiscation by the government trying to help manufacturers hurt by supply shortages?
No one knows the answer to that. So I don't know. Certainly, I thought he was going to say, you know, is my investment safe? And I would say to that question, which he didn't ask, is yes, because it's settled in fiat. It's settled in currency, so it doesn't matter. They can print it up and give it to you. But as far as, you know, the market, physical market getting tight, that would be my number one area of the greatest concern. I don't think there will be confiscation. However, if there were to be confiscation, where are you going to go? Well, you're probably going to go to a vehicle that has a lot of silver in one spot, a la the ETF, and also where by contract all you have to settle in is cash. So, you know, if you're going to put it on the worry meter, where am I the most worried? I would say yes, the ETF would be where I would be the most worried. But as far as getting your return, as far as, you know, cash in and cash out, I wouldn't worry about that. As far as could they take the silver that belongs to the market makers, it's possible. Yeah, it is.
Okay. And Jim Stewart in New York asks, how safe is paper silver, and do you consider ETFs paper silver?
ETFs are paper silver, and they're not nearly as safe as the physical market. Now, there are some ETFs that I think are better than others. The one by Zurich Continental Bank, I think, is straight up. I think you're getting the silver that you pay for there. The SLV, I'm not that favorable to, but I want to be fair and consistent. I think it's better than 50-50. In other words, I think it's a good thing from the aspect that it brought silver's in, you know, silver as an investment vehicle to more and more people. And I don't have a problem with you using the ETFs if you have enough real silver and gold in your own name that supports your need. In other words, if you had, say, 10% of your assets in the metals, half of that was in physical form, and you know that's what you had, it's all paid for, no margin, and you wanted to go into the ETF after that, I really didn't have a problem with that, because it's like anything in the stock market or the ETF world or the options or futures markets. I mean, they're all in the system and they're all based on the counterparty risk with the ability to pay in some kind of fiat currency, and they all can do that. So, you know, just understand what you're doing. Sounds like you probably do quite well. So people ask me all the time, you know, well, you know, I've got this much silver and I've got this much gold, and, you know, can I do the ETF? The answer, sure. If you are covered with what you need, and you want to, you know, hedge it, or you want to speculate in that manner, I really don't have a problem with that.
Okay. We've got Roger Wilson in New York City. Can I day trade silver? If so, how would a novice start?
That's the last place to start as a novice. You really don't want to get into leverage until you have been successful buying. I was going to say everyone, and that's not true, but a lot of people, especially in the metals for some reason, go about it in an upside-down way. I mean, basically, the first thing you should do is educate yourself and understand for you personally why you would be in the precious metals. You know, if you don't understand why you are in an investment, be it the real estate market or the stock market or the metals markets or, you know, tax liens or something, I mean, unless you understand why, you really don't have any business being in there. And then you've got to have a realistic expectation of what you expect to get as a return. You know, Warren Buffett is arguably one of the richest people on the planet. And people don't stop to realize that all Warren did, was compound at 24% year after year after year after year. When I started the Morgan Report, I mean, we were getting gains of, you know, 300%, 400%, 500%. On a lot of these stocks, and people thought that was normal. No, abnormal, extremely abnormal is an investor like Buffett that could compound over 24% year after year after year, getting 300%, 400%, 500%, 1,000% on some of these junior stocks. That's super abnormal, but you can't do it year after year after year, and we're in a phase of the market now where you're not going to see those kind of gains. We will see those kind of gains at the end, by the way. But in the middle part of the market where we are now, you won't see those kind of gains. But you'll see good gains, especially if things start to unravel, as I said. But you got to, you know, start slow, start easy, understand what you want to do, educate yourself. I mean, what you really want to be is, what I teach is what works best. You put serious money into serious, first you buy physical gold and silver, then you put serious money into serious companies. I mean, I'd rather see you have one, you know, if you had, let's say, $500 to your name, that's all you had to invest, I would rather see you put $450 in, like, the top stock that I've got on my list and then speculate with the other $50. I mean, that's the idea. The principles work no matter what the amount of money. You want serious money in serious companies. You want speculative money in speculative companies. You want to bet a little to win a lot. I mean, you don't want a lot of money riding on some junior mining company, believe me.
Okay. I think we've got one more live question and probably should stop it after that one. So if that's where you're
at. I have to. I've got a consultation coming up in just a few minutes, but I'll take the last one, you bet.
Okay. Eric, I think you're back again with another question. Did you have another
one? Yes, David, in relationship to these ETFs, where does a depository like Central Fund of Canada come in? What's your opinion of them?
Well, stellar. I mean, my wife's IRA is in the Central Fund of Canada, so if that tells you anything. I mean, my wife is, I've had her in the Central Fund of Canada for her IRA for 10 years, and I'm not moving it. So the only drawback on the silver fund account, one of the silver and golds there. I know Stephen Spicer personally. I know Ian McElvaney personally, McAvity personally. And it's great. It's a good vehicle. The problem is that it gets a pretty high premium at times. So if you are going to purchase it, you kind of want to watch the markets to see what the net asset value is to the sales price. You want to buy it pretty close to the net asset value.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that's one of the all-time good ones. I really like that investment vehicle.
Okay, Eric, did that answer your question?
Well, that's kind of my feelings. I've looked around. It looks like there are no nonsense people. I talked to Ian McAvity at the San Francisco show, and it seems like it's a far cry away from the GLD fund that has so many disclaimers.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually talked to McElvaney. He says he's in there doing inventory, so you're looking at someone who's done the inventory rather than just a piece of paper that says they did it.
Right.
All right.
But like I told you, I mean, I'm a no-nonsense guy, and I have my wife in it, so. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up. If you want to sign us off, however you're going to do that, that's fine. I've got to
see you pretty quick. Certainly appreciate you being with us today, and I want to say this, that we had the amount of questions where we only got to about half of them, so we may want to look at return at some point so that we can maybe just start right in and keep with questions throughout and get everyone's questions answered in the future. But I really appreciate the depth and the clarity of your information. And if you would, just one more time, give out your contact information so that people have that and we'll complete.
Okay, one more time real quickly. It's silver-investor.com. And if you want to sign up for the Morgan Report and see the members-only portion of the website, you can do that by going to silver-investor.com/republic. And that will give you access to the members-only portion of the website. I wrote a report probably 8-9 years ago called I think I called it Buffett and Silver. I don't even remember the title anymore, but it goes into Warren Buffett's father influence him on honest money. It's a pretty interesting report I wrote, and there's a lot of stuff on it like that. There's a lot of videos, audios, mining reports, the Morgan Report, of course, updates. You'll see. Anyway, that's it. I won't pitch it too hard. It's just, you know, it's my passion, obviously. It's my livelihood and my life's work, and you know, I have to say I'm pretty proud of it because I know what these other guys do. I mean, I trade with a lot of people. I get almost every newsletter out there, and I'm not saying that that work is inferior to mine because I won't, and some it may be superior. What I am saying is that the amount of effort, time, and what I produce for the amount of dollar invested in a newsletter is far, far superior in probably in I'd say in quality, but also in the content than what you get in for that same money with some other newsletter writer.
Great. Well, you've definitely given us a lot of value today and a lot more research that we can do, directions to look in, including your book and so forth. I wanted to let everybody know that we will have another webinar tomorrow and continue the discussion in regards to the economy. This webinar will be posted shortly. It's been recorded and it will be posted. And we'll look forward to seeing everybody tomorrow. Thank you again, David. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
The moderator has left the conference.